welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. In the next half hour, we will be talking all about the iconic Iowa bird known as the greater prairie chicken. And joining me today is Kevin Dreese, Director of Animal Care and Conservation at Blank Park Zoo. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Kevin, so tell us a little bit about the history of this iconic bird to the prairie. Most people living in Iowa probably don't even know about it or have even heard of.
That's true. I lived most of my life in Iowa, and I had never seen a greater prairie chicken until 2010. And so I think, especially for those folks that live in Iowa, the greater prairie chicken is an integral part of our state's history, and I think that it's worth knowing about the story of this remarkable bird. And in fact, most people know bison and prairies go together. Well, the greater prairie chicken is its life. History is even more intertwined with Iowa's rich history. Basically, in the great vast grasslands of all the central United States, the greater prairie chicken flourished prior to European settlement. But really, because what drew people to Iowa in particular, we'll say, is its fertile soils. And as we know, people coming to the state brought a lot of changes in the environment and the habitat. And it sort of worked against the natural history of the greater prairie chicken. But basically, the peak numbers of prairie chickens was in the mid-1800s when pioneers and farmers first started to farm here in Iowa. And at first, with the sort of less invasive way that people were plowing and developing their farms, why the prairie chicken did well. And a lot of the farmers in the late 1800s supplemented their income by trapping prairie chickens and sending them to harvest. But as time progressed, more changes for agricultural croplands and more and unregulated commercial hunting, why prairie chicken numbers started to plummet. And in about the early 1900s, people were noticing that the prairie chicken numbers were vastly reduced, and they started to limit harvest capabilities of people.
Yeah, talk a little bit about just the sheer numbers of prairie chickens, and you talked a little bit about their call. That would have been quite the sound to wake up to every day.
It would, and actually when some other states have also introduced small groups of prairie chickens, Illinois, Wisconsin, they actually term it the sounds of the prairie, just because in the breeding behavior of the species, there's an area called a lek, or a L-E-K, where historically the males come and defend their territories, and the females fly in to mate with the males and fly back, and this occurs in March, April of each spring. And that cackling and fighting could be heard, over the hills, through the prairies. And old-time stories of pioneers oftentimes recall fondly that it was the sound of spring and that soon the farmers would be planting when they could hear the greater prairie chickens dance.
What we're going to listen to now is the sound of a booming prairie chicken.
Well, I think from someone who's actually been in a turkey blind on a lek, what's a little bit different and even more dramatic than this is the sound of a prairie chicken is when the whole lek is doing it, because then you actually can't identify the individual bird and it's just constantly going off, and it seems like the birds, that the noise is coming from something much bigger than a chicken-sized bird. That's sort of the dramatic part. Plus, the sound starts coming before the sun is really up enough to see the birds. And so the first thing you hear, the first thing that your senses pick up is the sound that starts to happen before there's enough daylight to actually see the birds.
Well, okay, so continue the story on. We got to early 1900s when they started to limit the amount you could take. And tell us the story, from there.
Right. Well, up until then, it was unlimited harvesting. And like I said, a lot of farmers were doing it too. And they were sending the birds to the big cities as a food source for people. But basically, in the 1920s, people noticed what was going down, and so they started to limit the harvest. And in fact, I believe that that species in Iowa was one of the first times that a daily bag limit was enforced upon a game species. And of course, now that's one of the most common tools, is limiting the number of animals that can be harvested in a single day. And back then, they put a limit of 25 birds per day. And unfortunately, it was too many other changes going on, and the numbers were too low, that the species did not continue on in Iowa. In fact, it became extinct in 9 other states that it had previously been in. And at that time, they only continued on in 3 states, Kansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota. But basically for Iowa, the very last wild prairie chicken was seen in the 1950s, and then it was locally extirpated from the state of Iowa. Like other species of wildlife, just given the vast amount of changes that had occurred in the state. But the Iowa DNR did try some attempts to bring the prairie chicken back in the 1980s. At the same time, they were doing doing turkeys and trying to restore them as well. But they released greater prairie chickens in the Les Hills and also in southern Iowa down by Kellerton. They did it a couple of times in the 80s. And then when the zoo came on the scene, we were looking for a local conservation project that we could supply a little bit of funding and our staff time and resources to help with the project. And the non-game biologist for the state suggested we think about prairie chickens. And the more we learned about them, the more we wanted to be involved. And basically how our relationship started with the Iowa DNR was they really needed to assess the population that remained from the 1980s reintroduction. And they estimated there's only about 30 birds left in the state all around the Kellerton area in southern Iowa, about an hour and a half south of Des Moines, where basically row crop is less intensive there, and there's more rolling pastures because there's a lot of cow-calf operations. So there's still a fair amount of grassy areas there. So that first year, the zoo funded a technician to do habitat surveys to just sort of get an idea of the habitat in that area and see if it was worthwhile to maybe think about translocating more birds there if there was the habitat to support it.
Okay, could you tell me just a little bit about what distinguishes a greater prairie chicken from just a regular chicken?
Okay. All right. Well, they are a regular chicken and a greater prairie chicken is they're both galliforms. So they're in the same order of birds. So technically, you know, they're related. They're kind of similar. But obviously a chicken is a domesticated bird from probably an Asian ancestor, where the greater prairie chicken is a native bird that's in the grouse family. And so really some people call it a grass grouse because it doesn't live in the woodlands like the ruffed grouse, but it lives out in the grasslands. And basically greater prairie chickens are very camouflaged. They're coloring, feather coloring is shades of brown, so that they're very cryptic. The males, when they do their display, most people can imagine a turkey doing a strut. Well, a greater prairie chicken has a dance, and it raises up its feathers, and it has two inflatable featherless sacs on the side of its neck that it can inflate and then boom and make these sounds that they do, and they're bright yellow. And they have little feathers on the top of their head that are like little crests that they raise up during the same time. They drop their wings, they spread their little tail, and they patter their feet on the ground, and they make noises with their wings when they're displaying on the lek.
So we were talking about the study Blank Park Zoo helped fund. So why don't you pick up there and just explain what the study did and what we did with the results of the study.
Okay. Well, so we really were just getting it started. The non-game biologist wanted to investigate the greater prairie chickens in Iowa, but it hadn't risen to their up their priority list enough to fund looking into it. So with that data from that first season, which was 2011, the Iowa DNR had the information to show that yes, there is a likely suitable habitat for prairie chickens, and they made a case for working with Nebraska Game and Parks Commission to get permission to move prairie chickens from Nebraska to Iowa. And kind of the deal that the Iowa DNR reached was that we would move 50 birds in 2012 and then 100 birds for 4 years after that. And the Nebraska was going to identify where the birds should be taken from and how many could be taken from each lek. Like I said, the areas where they congregate during the breeding times. And they identified the first couple of times. We used those 50 birds to sort of hone our techniques about, A, how you're going to catch a prairie chicken without hurting it, and then, A, how you're going to transport it 8 or 9 hours by vehicle and release it with a high success rate of the birds actually being released in Iowa.
And so what was the result of those 4 years of relocating birds?
All right, well, the study really had two objectives. One is sort of a genetic study where they would draw blood for genetic analysis of birds that were being brought to Iowa. And also they had collected feathers from the existing birds that were already in Iowa. And the idea was through time, see how the bringing in of the new birds, how that affects the genetic diversity of the population in Iowa, with the goal being of establishing a viable, stable population of prairie chickens in Iowa. But really, the greater prairie chicken, there is the advantage that if it could support a population of prairie chickens, it could also support dozens and, in fact, hundreds of other species of birds that depend on grasslands. So there was that objective, the genetic aspect, but there was also then the opportunity to learn something about what prairie chickens do when they've been translocated. And translocated means you capture a wild bird, you move it somewhere, and you release it before it has gotten used to captivity. And so the Iowa DNR, and with some funding from us, and now they're also making it, they took it on as their project. They attached GPS monitors on some of the birds so that they could get the pings to monitor where those birds dispersed after being released.
And so what was the result? How many stayed in Iowa? How many went back to Nebraska or Missouri?
Well, one of the things that was learned is that there are a lot of hazards for prairie chickens once they're translocated, and from predation, as well as a few were traffic fatalities. But however, they did document some nesting, because one thing, the GPS lasts long enough that they could find some nests, and these years later now, they have a fair amount of data, and they're starting to draw some conclusions. And the idea is to make a model for habitat suitability for prairie chickens, meaning what kinds of things go into making habitat suitable for greater prairie chickens. And it's not as simple as, well, they need prairies. Certainly, they do need grasslands. Doesn't matter, most of the grasslands that the cattle graze on are introduced species of grass. That's okay. But prairie chickens also need forbs, which is, plants that they can eat. And they can't have too much, I'm going to say, thatch within the thing. The chicks have to be able to move within the grassland. So there's several components that have to go into habitat suitability. And they've got enough data to create a model that pretty much they looked at the whole state. And there really is probably about 8 or 9 counties that match together with property across the border into Missouri, the Nature Conservancy, the Dunn Ranch, all that combined. There's about 70,000 acres of where landowners have agreed to support this effort and maybe manage their lands in a way that's suitable for greater prairie chickens. And one thing that is like, how do you manage lands for greater prairie chickens? A couple of things. One is you really have to watch the level of intensity of grazing of your cattle and your pasture. And two, prairie chickens do best in a treeless landscape. Like trees tend to give places for aerial birds of prey to sit. And at these lek sites where the birds gather, part of what their mission is for other birds to see them. So they're out in the open and they're really susceptible to predation by aerial predators. And so no trees, especially around leks. So I should say fewer trees. And so that when landowners are managing their pastures, it actually helps a prairie chicken to not have so many trees. So they have learned that. We've been seeing birds, and they actually celebrate the spring booming time of the birds with prairie chicken festivals down at Kellerton.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about how people can be involved in that.
Yeah, well, every spring, Ringhold County Conservation has a prairie chicken festival down on the Kellerton site where they set up scopes. So, and there's a viewing deck so you can see better the prairie chickens in action, little dancers on the prairie. And we even here at the zoo in 2015 had a prairie chicken festival at the zoo where Pat Schlallerbaum with the Iowa, he's a technician for the Iowa DNR, new Chief Blue Star, Sherwin Zephyr, and he came with some Native American dancers, and they did some demonstrations of dancing and some drumming that really honored the cultural significance of the greater prairie chicken for them. And there's kind of an interesting story that I learned the day we did that. When Chief Blue Star was here, he was saying that, yes, their culture is aware that that their ancestors relied on the bison, but the bison actually disappeared a generation of people before their culture was really diminished. And so there is a generation of people, the older generation, that they really were able to keep their culture living free after the bison was gone because they sustain themselves on the prairie chicken. And so the prairie chicken actually has more of a connection to those Native American folks than the bison actually did. And so when they have their Native American dance competitions and that sort of thing, a prairie chicken dance is the one that wins and the one that everyone's into. And the prairie chicken dance is such that it represents something that is, Chief Blue Star told me, it's kind of like the football players after a field goal where they bump chests and something like that. They call it brotherly love. And really it is this fighting between males for basically mating rights. So he said it's like brotherly love, fighting for love.
We have a sound clip of the prairie chicken dance performed at Blank Park Zoo back in 2015. Let's listen to it. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Kevin Dries from Blank Park Zoo about prairie chickens. So tell us a little bit about where the prairie chicken is now, as far as, is it back in Iowa? What are the numbers? And then we'll talk a little bit about the future.
Okay. Well, the prairie chicken does actually have those huntable populations out west. And there are several states like Iowa that have fragmented small populations that are going to need monitoring in the future, which means that depending on how they do, we may have to move some more birds from Nebraska to supplement this Iowa-Missouri population. But they do annual brood counts, And that is where, you know, like through a driving survey, you just see how many families of prairie chickens have hatched off. And in that way, they get an idea of how the population is doing. I don't know the estimated population now, but after Iowa stopped translocating birds, the state of Missouri did the same thing. And really, those two populations are going to work together, and they go back and forth. In fact, when Iowa was moving them 100 birds, we would do sometimes half in Missouri, cross the line in Missouri, and half in Iowa. So basically, Iowa had permission to move some, then Nebraska does, and so together we will have this sort of bi-state population. Of course, you know, birds don't know political boundaries like we do, and so they're just going by, again, that habitat suitability. So it's kind of interesting. Someone might ask, how do you catch a wild prairie chicken? And actually, what the DNR figured out is that you use their natural behavior against them. And by that, I mean that when we're talking about those leks, where the males come, basically they set up in a star shape, real short, like 2 foot tall chicken wire, and made it into a star. And at the point of each star, there is a wire box, or like a trap, where it's a cone, which they crawl through the cone, and it's easy to go in, but then not so easy to come back out. And basically, before the sun comes up, you go out, you set, you open the doors, and you set those traps. You go back in the truck. They're all out in Nebraska. They're all desensitized to trucks, so they don't mind a truck nearby. And basically, you wait. As the sun comes up, the birds come in, and they want to get at each other. The hens come in. They want to get to the males. And basically, they end up just naturally going into these traps. And then basically, for those of us who would be waiting in a truck, you rush out, and you try to remove the birds from the wire trap before they've, you know, jumped around too much so they don't injure themselves. And we would band them, determine the sex, and do a little blood draw, and then we put them in a soft, dark, individual, I think it was a guinea pig cage, to be honest. And then that morning, whatever birds we caught, someone would drive them to Iowa, Nebraska, and release them.
Tell us a little bit about, other than people, predators for a prairie chicken.
Well, they do nest on the ground, and so those kind of predators that find nests and chicks, you know, for us, it would be foxes, coyotes, people's dogs, also aerial predators, hawks that, you know, everybody seems to, just like the pioneers in the 1880s, they thought prairie chickens tasted good. Well, so do a lot of the predators. And so there is a fair amount of predatory pressure that goes on, but if the habitat is there, the population can overcome that sort of natural component to their livelihood.
So I'm guessing hawks?
Yes. The aerial predators, hawks and owls.
Hawks, owls, foxes.
Mm-hmm. Coyotes.
Coyotes. Mm-hmm. Raccoons.
Yeah, and even large enough snakes can take eggs too.
As far as your expectations going into this project, do you think you passed those expectations? What were your expectations? Were your expectations met, exceeded, not exceeded? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think this project has exceeded all our expectations, not only the zoos, but also the Iowa DNRs. Because really, they knew it was a species that should be looked at, but the zoo helped make it a priority. We were interested. We have you know, almost 500,000 visitors a year, and we are going to share our efforts with the greater prairie chickens with those. The Iowa DNR thought that was a plus, and together, we have assessed it. We've moved some birds, and it seems like it's going in the direction of having a stable population. And really, it was a prairie chicken's turn. I mean, the turkeys are back. The white-tailed deer are established. Otters have come back. Bobcats. And it's the prairie chicken's turn. And there still is, from this study, suitable habitat in the state of Iowa. And it's part of our Iowan heritage. And it makes sense that the prairie chicken plays a role in it.
Some people may think it's weird that you don't actually exhibit prairie chickens at Blank Park Zoo. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, although I've just been singing the praises of greater prairie chicken, they're awesome wildlife spectacle in the breeding grounds, but they do not do well in captivity. And one of those reasons is they're very territorial, that whole thing, the whole dance, all that there, that's males competing. And so in captivity, they're very hard on each other. And so, you know, you would be displaying single birds in enclosures. And I also said how cryptic they are, kind of brown in color. Now, you can get some really cool footage of when the males are displaying, but for the other 10 months out of the year, which also includes our main season, they are not doing the breeding displays, and they're not all that colorful. So you got a bird that doesn't do well in captivity, isn't that much for most of the time, a spectacle for people, and so we should just view it as we are concerned about all wildlife outside the zoo walls, and this is one where a captive display probably would not be as inspiring as people actually going to the Prairie Chicken Festival and seeing them display in the wild.
So talk a little bit about Blank Park Zoo. Blank Park Zoo is a nonprofit, so how do they fund conservation projects?
All right. Well, in 2010, the zoo decided that it really wanted to up its game, get more involved in situ or in the wild, outside the walls of the zoo conservation. And so during a regular planned price increase for admissions, we decided that a quarter of that would go towards our in situ conservation project, which we called Coins for Conservation. So basically a quarter from every admission or a dollar from every family membership went towards our in situ conservation efforts. And for us, that meant about $60,000, $70,000 a year that prior to that we didn't have. So we decided we'd have three main projects that we could spend about $10,000 each on. And of course, at the zoo, we have a lot of international species and there's lots of animals that need help. But we chose two for prominent species we had at the zoo, the International Rhino Foundation and the Giraffe Conservation Foundation, but we really want to do something local. And that is when we talked to the non-game biologists and we settled on the Greater Prairie Chicken project. What's really cool is just this year, besides the quarter, we decided that the zoo wanted to be more involved, and we decided that a percentage of every dollar that comes into the zoo, so not only admissions, but also, you know, earned revenue from the train and all that, plus donations that come to the zoo, that a percentage is going to go towards in situ conservation. So besides our three main projects, we have eight or nine other projects that we fund at a little bit lower level, but one of the coolest ones is where staff get to be involved, Staff Action Conservation Fund, and we have sent animal care staff to assist with the rhino project in Uganda and a giraffe project in Namibia and all kinds of fun things.
Well, Kevin, thanks for joining us today. Blank Park Zoo is open year-round and open 7 days a week during the summer. You can learn all about the zoo, such as the animals, special events, previous episodes of this show, and more at blankparkzoo.com. Make sure you check out the zoo's YouTube channel where there's lots of fun video and also some video of the greater prairie chicken. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Please make sure you join us again for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.